This is the Voices of the West.
Welcome to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
And welcome to the Voices of the West, Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. I'm Harry Alexander, your producer and sort of host, I guess. host is Bunker de France, and our occasional host is Joe Dreyfus, but he's not here today. So
he's occasionally here.
He's occasionally here. And today we're going to be talking with authors Gail Corkhill and Doug Hocking. Both will be at the Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House. That's happening Saturday, November the 4th. Invite you all to come on out there and have a rip-roaring good time.
Have a howdy-doody.
There you go.
Good time.
Have a howdy-doody good time. Let's see. Check us out at voicesofthewest.net. And if you're listening, obviously, that's where you're at. You've also got to check out our Facebook page, Facebook at Voices of the West. And do like our page, because we indeed do like being liked.
And we like you.
And we like you, too. And if you have any questions for our guests today, shoot us an email at voicesofthewest@gmail.com. And Bunker, you've got something that you want to talk about there
before we get to our guests. Folks, we're also rebroadcasting at 8 o'clock tonight.
That's right.
And we are in rotation 24/7.
There you go.
Which means that Harry and me aren't rotating, but the programs are.
We feel like we're rotating sometimes.
Now, we've got a new thing we're going to be kind of starting here.
Yeah.
And it's to test your brain power, kind of.
All right.
And we're going to be running every show a little quiz. And it's going to concern Mr. John Wayne, the Duke. Well, now, thank you, Bunker. And the question is going to be from his various movies. And what we want you to do is, if you know the answer right away, email us and let us know.
Yeah.
If you don't know it right away and you sneak off and you look it up, you can email us later. And next Saturday, to be continued, we will give you the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And we will continue to do this throughout eternity, or whatever shorter.
And the prize is going to be absolutely nothing, just
absolutely
the knowledge
none,
that, that you know.
We'll lap it upon you in
hits
and
right.
bounds.
Exactly.
Now,
yeah.
The question is, and this is from Stagecoach, 1939, United Artists, name the actor who plays the stagecoach driver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the question. Now get busy with your little fingers and send us an answer.
And we'll pop that up on the voicesofthewest.net website as well later on. All right, our guest for this first half hour is Gail Corkhill. And she's, like I said, going to be at the Empire Ranch Roundup in Open House Saturday, November the 4th. She's been there before, and she's written a number of books, and one of them happens to be, by golly, on the Empire Ranch. Hi, Gail.
Hi, how are you, Harry?
We are fine. We are fine.
Good book. I said I've got it sitting here right in front of me, so I can double-check everything that I double-checked here. Also, I might mention you got the another book, the one about the Circle Z, or no, Circle X. I know it's a very good book.
That's the Circle B guest ranch.
Pardon?
The Circle B guest ranch.
Circle T.
Circle T?
Yeah.
No, Z as in Z.
I had it right the first time, then I corrected myself.
Circle Z as in Z.
I have troubles with Z's and X's.
That's all right.
That's the far end of the dictionary.
I know.
I'm getting there. I'm around to C or D now. I'm working on E and F next.
Well, Gail, tell us about this Empire Ranch book. I mean, this is one in a series of a variety of books, and the publisher's name escapes me. Arcadia? Is
that Arcadia right? Book.
Arcadia Publishing. And I know I've seen a number of these. You've written this one. You've written a number of other books. Let's talk about this Empire Ranch book to get things started.
Well, did you do this all by yourself, or did you have help?
Well, actually, the book was written, I co-authored it with Sharon Hunt,
mm-hmm.
and she's a historian, also an editor. Her area of interest is actually in conservation for the Civil Service Fishing Service.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically approached me about writing the book. She had written The Images of America, Vale and Blackwell Cave. And she and I had worked on a educational project. And she said she would like me to do it. And I looked into it, and I said, well, if co-author it with me, then I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it all began.
You're also involved with the Empire Ranch as a sometime volunteer, is that correct?
That's right. I used to be the education director for the Wild About Grassland program,
mm-hmm.
which is was the foundation's ecology and lesson heritage program for youth. And that was started in 2007 under the direction of Pete Stuhr, who was one of the founding, is one of the founding members
mm-hmm.
of the Empire Ranch Foundation.
You know, Gail, I've got to kind of digress for a second, because you and Harry, in a kind of offbeat way, share a commonality.
Uh-oh.
And now the commonality is that Harry, being a pirate,
uh-oh.
Is very much into buried treasures.
Yes.
And you, being a teacher, are very much into the GPS and using that as one of your teaching tools. So I thought maybe you and Harry could maybe do a little talk about how you hide and find stuff.
Geocaching.
Yes.
Yes. Do you do geocaching?
Well, you start, and then I'll fill in.
Oh, well, part of what we did for Wild About the Grassland is we wanted children to identify plants and then use technology to do math. So I learned about geocaching through one of the BLM staff members who actually was living at the headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And so he taught the students and myself how to geocache. And there's over, I want to say, I don't know, over 20 some odd geocaches just on the off alone.
Mm-hmm.
I played in 2016, the team and I played two geocaches, micro-cache and a multi-cache, right at Empire Ranch headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, for those of you who don't know what geocaching is, you use GPS device. You go on geocaching.com website, and then when you place the cache, you log it in and you put the coordinates on the website along with the description.
Mm-hmm.
And you also something I put. I usually put information that I arrange.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so worldwide, the treasure hunt game that has so many different variations. What some people get really crazy competitive about it, but what I enjoy most about geocaching is that it takes you to places that you probably just don't. So what about yourself?
Yeah, you find all kinds of neat things, and of course you're not supposed to take them once you found them.
How do you hide stuff as a pirate?
Well, I hate to break this to you, but pirates never buried treasure.
That makes sense.
Because why would they?
Yeah.
You're at sea for who knows how long. You plunder a vessel, you get jewels and clothing and coins and
rum.
And rum.
That's the most rum.
That's the most important thing. And you make port someplace, and you're not going to put that in the bank or bury it. You're going to go spend it
Yarr.
On more liquor and wenches. So Yes. all of these tales about pirates bearing treasure, I hate to tell you this, but they are nothing more than tales. And I know that there's a number of so-called treasure maps out there for folks to go...
For sale.
Yeah, for sale, and to go look for treasure. But, man, if they find it, I want to be in on that, too.
The only way I could see burying treasure is if you took a ship, but you took a few broadsides yourself, mm-hmm. and you're leaking so bad mm-hmm. that you're gonna go into Jamaica in rowboats, then maybe you might bury it on a beach, but only because you can't take it with you.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That would be the only case I could think of.
That's true, but you generally speaking, they didn't bury any treasure.
They just beach it, right?
Well. If the vessel was being sunk, they would certainly hope that there was another one around that they could plunder. but it usually what would happen is these things would go down, and they go down rather quick. So there wasn't much chance of salvaging a whole lot. Pretty much what you had on you is what you had. And kind of like riding the range. You know, what you got with you is what you got.
What I take away from this is that geocaching is a lot safer.
Indeed. Indeed. Pirates are like outlaws of the Old West, except we have boats.
Or comancheros.
Or comancheros, yeah. We have boats.
Well, Gail, you know, you've been involved very heavily with the ranch when you were doing the teaching outreach. Tell us about some of the programs that you did, because as far as I am concerned, I'm hoping that somewhere down the line we can reintroduce some of these programs for the public out there.
Well, the program that I developed with a colleague named Nathine Seckler, and she is a conservationist and a biologist. So what we did is we focused on ecology, but also how the ecology or the landscape helps in terms of land management and how the Bureau of Land Management and the ranchers work together to preserve the environment as well as the national landscape.
Were you involved when they were doing the campouts there?
Yes, that was a mentorship program that I did with the teens that were mentors for the younger students who attended the day program.
That seems like such a wonderful program. I know we had difficulties with it there towards the end, but one of my goals is hopefully somewhere down the road reestablish ourselves with the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and any of the other youth organizations in the area, and maybe get a new, differently organized program going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, actually, I also had Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts coming out to participate in day activities to help with them complete some of their merit badge requirements.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the original program, while it started in 2007 and ended in 2015, and it was funded by a grant through the Handbook Program, which is a partnership with the Bureau of Land Management and other conservation college programs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a question here for you about the book, because Empire Ranch, I love the way that it's laid out with the different generations, and then getting into the section of the women of the ranch, the heart and hearth of the empire. And, you know, the ladies, because this is something so often when the history of ranching and the West itself is written, the women's contribution is too often just kind of glossed over. And here, I got to add, too, that the pictures, anybody that has not seen the Empire Ranch book, they should go down to Barnes & Noble or Amazon and get a hold of this book. The price is reasonable, and there's a picture or two on every pages with captions telling you everything that you need to know about the picture. And I'll tell you, you can't beat that learning combination of seeing and reading, because it's concise and precise.
Or come to the roundup and visit our gift shop, because we've got them for sale in there.
That's true. But give us kind of your feeling about when you were researching the women of the ranch, because that's, to me, that's one of my favorite parts of the book.
Well, thank you, Bunker, for saying that, because that is probably my favorite chapter that I wrote for the entire ranch book. I use both the oral histories that the Empire Ranch Foundation has in their archive, along talking with some of the folks, of family members, but mostly reading about the oral histories that were provided by, for example, the Al, Margaret Boyd. Those were really rich sources of information. And I asked you, Billy Donald, at her home, to finish up the chapter. The present to where she was at and what she was doing, and then moving the chapter into Tomlinson family and the women in the Tomlinson family. So mostly the influence of the cattle ranching woman, and in many ways, all of the women in that chapter were, they said, behind every great man there's a woman. I think women certainly emulate that.
Well, you know, there's a picture in there, and I love the pictures, but there's a picture in there of Dusty Vale when she's around, I think, 20 horseback. And, you know, this is something I've been around all my life, is around livestock. And it's amazing when you can look at a picture and you know that person can ride. Mm. And, you know, she's got that look of confidence. The hands, you know, I always look at the hands, how the reins are held, and she just, you know, she's just sitting there. She got a big grin on her face, but it just says, this says cowgirl, mm-hmm. You know, and it's a great picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another
picture. When you look at her hands, those
are
working hands.
Yeah, working hands is right. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a couple of pages earlier, there's a picture of Margie Vale at 27, and I love the picture because in it, you know, we always have this image of the Western woman dressed like Dale Evans or in the movies, you know, and she's got on a pair of riding boots, mm-hmm. not cowboy boots, mm-hmm. riding boots, the riding breeches, and a duster coat, a short coat,
mm-hmm.
and I can remember my relatives, aunts, and whatnot. You know, they all had riding boots. It wasn't until after the 40s that they started wearing jeans and cowboy boots.
Yeah.
They dressed more like ladies.
Mm.
And I thought this is a great picture. You know?
We have to take a break here, Gail, so hang on, and we'll be back with Gail Corkill on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West right after this break. Stand by.
Johnny Umar, the rebel, he wandered alone. Umar was a rebel, he roamed through the west. Johnny Umar, the rebel, he wandered.
The phrase highfalutin has several definitions. Believed to have originated in the 1800s, it suggests a person who is pompous, full of self-importance. It's also defined as a person who's a stuffed shirt or stuck up. Nothing could be further from the truth about Highfalutin Rapid Fire Western Grill at 6780 North Oracle Road. It's not a stuck-up place, and it comes nowhere near pompous. At Highfalutin Rapid Fire Western Grill, it simply means great food at even better prices for lunch and for dinner. Whatever you order at Highfalutin, I know your appetite will be satisfied. I know that because I eat there. Plus, Highfalutin features a great bar stocked with a variety of high-quality adult beverages. And talk about the service. Well, the well-trained and friendly servers at Highfalutin provide you with the best. So, for lunch or a great dinner, Highfalutin Rapid Fire Western Grill is the place to go. Highfalutin, just north of Orange Grove at 6780 North Oracle, 297-0518, and HighfalutinTucson.com.
Hi, this is Joe Mantegna. Every time my Uncle Willie tells me about his service in Patton's Third Army in World War II, I'm reminded of what we owe the U.S. Army. 14 generations of American soldiers who have courageously defended our nation. Their stories represent the best of America and should never be forgotten. Join me to help build the National Museum of the United States Army, a long overdue tribute to all American soldiers. To learn more, visit armyhistory.org.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Camp Town ladies sing this song.
Do-da, do-da.
Camp Town racetrack's 5 miles long.
Oh, do-da day.
I come down da with a hat paved in.
Do-da, do-da.
I go back home with a pocket full of tin.
Oh, do-da day. Wine run all night, wine run all day.
I'll bet my money on the bobtail nag.
Somebody bet on the bay.
And we are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West here on a Saturday afternoon. Bunker DeFrance, Harry Alexander, and our guest, Gail Corkle. I don't know why I want to add a Mac in there. seems like it should be in there. But
was that Alvin and the Chipmunks?
No, that was Uncle Ned Ring on the banjo.
Sounds like a little Chipmunk right in there.
Camp Town races, you know.
Just, oh, Gail, I got another question for you. This is a little... This may be a little left field for you, but you know one of the things which you show throughout the book is that the Empire Ranch really was made up of many, many, many ranches. That you know the Vales and the Boises bought and sold ranches throughout their careers. And one of the ranches that I'm curious about is it would be the Happy Valley portion of the ranch up. You know, a little bit east of Vail there. What can you tell me about that? Do you know anything much about that area?
No, I don't know. One of the ranches, though, that in the Circle V Death Ranch book, the Stockton Valley Ranch, was that owned by Denton and John Stanton. And that was later on in the early 1800s, Walter Vail actually purchased the Stockton Valley Ranch, which was in the Seneca Valley, not too far from the Stockton Valley Ranch, and the D.S. Brand from Don Alonzo Sanford, who eventually later on, the Circle B Death Ranch was purchased the land from.
Oh, good. Well,
there's a shared history actually between the two books.
Okay. Well, just maybe a little side trip again here, but the Total Wreck played a very important role in the expansion of the ranch. Could you expound on that and its contribution?
Well, the Total Wreck mine was discovered by gentleman named a wrangler named Dillon, and he looked up in the Empires and said, "Wow, that looks like a could be a silver area." So they went ahead and put several claims in with Don Harvey and Walker, and one of them was silver, and that later on became the Total Wreck
town of Total Rest. And that was pretty booming for about 4 years. And Ed Hale actually oversaw the event. And anyway, so it was a very successful silver mining operation that netted $500,000 for Vail or landholders along the community.
And just think what the $500,000 would be in modern dollars. That would be, you know, umpteen million dollars. Well, you know, one of the interesting things about the town itself is, as I understand, it consisted of 50 houses with 300 residences. There were 3 stores, 3 hotels, 4 saloons, a brewery, a butcher shop, a bank, a lumber yard, a post office, and that the Southern Pacific actually put a spur into the ranch.
There's actually a geocache out there as well.
How long was the
one of these days I would love to do a tour of Empire Ranch Foundation members and hike out there.
That would be great.
Yeah,
because I've been back in the back country there at the ranch a couple of times, and you know, it's one of the kind of hobby horses I ride is I keep trying to tell people that, you know, the buildings were the headquarters and the ranch was the land around it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about the Empire Ranch, we're talking about the Empire, but we're talking about the land, mm-hmm, and the holdings and the livestock.
Right.
And it's easier to show the houses, I understand, yeah, but I wish we could really showcase the land and some of this background.
All we need is a helicopter, right?
Well, no, we just need some 4-wheel drives.
There you go.
Some people that would be willing to. That's one of the things. Another one of my little pet projects is I want to see us maybe once or twice a year, like to do the trail ride,
mm-hmm,
have a safari into, mm-hmm, the backcountry of the Empire Ranch.
That'd be cool.
You know, charge folks and go back in there.
That'd be cool.
Have somebody like Gail explain things to them.
Mm.
How do you think about that, Gail?
Yeah, I'm on board.
Well, you're hired. We'll negotiate the remuneration later.
Once again, Gail Corkle is going to be at the Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House Saturday, November the 4th, and she'll be in the author's tent there. We'll have a number of authors there talking about their books, and obviously folks will be able to purchase books, and you can even get them signed, I'm sure.
And folks, you can sit down and ask Gail questions, especially if you've bought the book.
Yeah.
You can really get her, you know, put her on the grill. Well, it's been great, Gail. We really enjoyed having you with us today.
Well, I sure appreciate the opportunity. It's been fun.
Anything else you want to throw in there before we have to say bye?
Well, just come on out to the Empire Ranch and enjoy the roundup. It's absolutely worth it, and you'll keep coming back.
There you go.
Thank you.
Gail Corkle, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon and evening and whatever else time zone our listeners happen to be in, since we are going worldwide these days.
It could be nighttime in New Zealand. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. So Gail's going to be out there at the Empire Ranch Roundup in Open House November the 4th. So are we. We're going to be out there too. We'll be talking, hopefully, with our good friend Doug Hocking right after this. Stay tuned.
Hacienda, there's a touch of Mexico, cactus lovelier than orchids, blooming in my patio.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Coming events at the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club, Autumn Grand Trap Shoot. It's happening November 1st through the 12th.
When looking for a property management company, here are some things you should consider. How long has the company been in business? What types of properties can they manage for you? And does the company give back to the community? Well, your search is over. The Polash Management Company meets and exceeds those considerations. They've been in business in Tucson, Arizona since the 1960s. They manage all types of properties throughout Arizona and elsewhere, from residential to commercial to public sector properties. The Polash Management Company also dedicates its time and resources to numerous community projects, including help funding the drive for the USS Arizona Memorial at the University of Arizona. You also want a property management company that puts you, the customer, first. Contact the Polash Management Company today at polashmanagement.com and ask about the complete package or call 520-795-2100. That's 520-795-2100. The Polash Management Company, property managers you can trust. Join us at the Empire Ranch for the annual Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House on Saturday, November 4th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You'll experience what life on a ranch was like in the 1880s. Cowboy demonstrations, cowboy talks, B-Troop 4th U.S. Calf, music, chuck wagon food, and a silent auction. Free admission, $10 donation for parking. It's tons of family fun. The Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House, Saturday, November 4th at the historic Empire Ranch. Take Interstate 10 to the Sonoyta exit and follow the signs. More information at Empire Ranch Foundation.
And we are back on Abel Franzi's Voices of the West, and Doug Hocking is with us. Doug, just to let you know, that is, I am under contract obligation to play that song once a show. So
that's right. I got a knife here, and I'm holding it at Harry's throat. If he doesn't play it, it's all over.
Doug Hocking, how the hell are you?
I'm great. It's been a good day.
Good.
Good.
Good. Yeah, you're down in Tubac. At what's going on down there?
It's on today in Tubac.
Ah.
Yeah.
You say tuba or Tubac?
Tubac.
Oh, okay.
Tubac.
You got a lot of folks down there selling books, and you're selling books?
Well, we had a lot of folks down there. We were the only ones selling books.
Mm-hmm.
We had Spanish lancers on horseback.
Mm-hmm.
And
cool.
Ooh, wow.
Folks firing cannons and
nice
muskets.
Well, that's a parish out there.
Yeah.
And then they wandered off to found San Francisco.
That D'Anza Trail. They'll get lost for sure.
Doug Hocking is also one of the authors who's going to be at the Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House November 4th. And he'll have a bunch of his books available. One of them is Tom Jeffords. Now, when I saw you last weekend, was it last weekend? At the Patagonia Festival. You were talking about some really interesting things about the Tom Jeffords book. So lay it on us, sir.
Yeah, just go crazy.
Okay, well, it's the first time that there has been a biography of Tom Jeffords. But folks out there who don't know the name Tom Jeffords should think Jimmy Stewart in the movie Broken Arrow, riding alone into Cochise's camp to make the peace. The piece really was based on their friendship. Couldn't have existed without it. Gave Arizona 4 years of peace from 72 to 76, all based on the friendship and trust between the two.
And what was Tom Jeffers' motivation for doing that? Did it have anything to do with his stage line?
Actually, no.
Oh, okay.
That was one of the stories that was told. But there's no evidence that his pony riders, actually, his male riders, mm-hmm. were attacked by the Apache, or that he went into Cochise's camp at the time.
Well, you know, that's one of the things about your book that I think is so special and unique, is that it does. It takes all of these little stories that have been told and gathered over the years, and people, the historians come along, and they just repeat what other people have said. Mm-hmm. And you've done a great job, actually, of, you know, I won't say exposing, but of clarifying those things. It's just like the Apache wife never happened. I mean, it's a nice thing. Plus, I think the actual Tom Jefferson was a better-looking Westerner than Jimmy Stewart, and I know that's heresy.
Well, you're
well, go ahead. Certainly looked more the part of a Westerner.
Yes.
Well,
exactly.
you also mentioned that the Jeffords book is you got mentioned three times in True West magazine.
Yeah, the first month they did a review with it, two pages featured the review on the cover.
Wow.
Named the book an instant classic.
Nice.
The next month was my article going from the novel and the movie to reality.
Hmm.
And the month after that, we got listed, the only one with a picture, on their 27 selection of books not to miss.
Wow.
I think you got a mention in Cowboys and Indians about referencing the book as a very good read.
Oh, well, that's great. I didn't know about that one.
I could be wrong, but I think I know, because I've seen it in other places besides True West. Go ahead.
Roundup Magazine has given it a great review.
Good.
And there's a great review coming in the Journal of Arizona History.
Hmm. Oh, I'll have to check that out.
I'm going to have to buy the book and do our own review.
Well, you know, if you don't belong to the history chapter,
right.
You can go up to the Tucson Library. Yep. They always have the current issue and back issues there in the magazine section.
That's right. Doug, how in the world did Tom Jeffords ever, what prompted him to become friends with Cochise? Now, we know from historical records that James Tevis was friendly with Cochise. How in the world did Jeffords get into this? I mean, what was the motivation?
I hate to say it. Money.
That's what the old manifest destiny.
There you go, yeah.
A peace commission had gone through Cochise's camp. Cochise wasn't home. He was away on a raid. They rounded up all of his people except his immediate family and took them peacefully into Kenyatta Alamosa Reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And now they needed somebody to bring Cochise in to talk peace. So they looked around for somebody to do it, and finally Jeffords said, yeah, I'll go.
Hmm.
He was one of the bravest people ever.
Hmm.
I mean, this was right after the Camp Grant massacre.
Yep.
The Apaches were nervous.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at that time, Cochise wouldn't come in because he was afraid to travel with just his family.
And General Crook was still in charge of the Department of Arizona, right?
And he was driving down from up near Prescott down towards southeast Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd also had some bad dealings with the Army, too.
Well, who hasn't?
Very bad dealings. Well, what about Jeffers' scouting career? You have 10 years as a scout for the Army. You know, you've had to cover a lot of different country and a lot of different experiences.
He started scouting for the Army in 62 and worked for them off and on up until 72.
Hmm.
And then after Cochise died, he worked for them again off and on. At one point, he brought in Geronimo from mm-hmm. Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
How did he get along with Shevers?
You know, I honestly didn't run into any interaction between the two.
That's, you know, you would think because of the time period and
yeah.
and the area and the military, they would have. But then again, though, it was a big country, and
that's right.
And you didn't necessarily know your neighbors.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, they were doing different things.
Yeah.
Every time the Chiricahua got roused up, mm-hmm. the army asked Shepard to come up and calm them down. You know, and while the scout would be out on the trail of Geronimo, wherever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Boy, that's lonely work, being a scout. Lonely yeah. work. Wow. Wow. Well, now, besides the Tom Jeffords book, you have a number of other books out. Let's talk about those, Doug.
Well, my first book was Massacre at Point of Rocks, which is the true story of Ann White and her baby daughter taken captive by Hickory Apache mm-hmm. in 1849.
That's your neighbors. Looking
to kick Taurus and recruit it to take them back.
Wow.
First time that Hickory side of the story has been told anywhere. To this day, they will not talk to outsiders about what happened. But I grew up on the reservation.
Well,
to tell their story.
When you were doing the research for this, did you go to any of the elders of the Hickorias and ask questions, or was that kind of, you don't do that?
Yes, I did.
And how much help were they?
Excuse me?
How much help were they?
A great deal. It's how I got their side of the story.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, these are people I'd known since I was a kid.
Yeah, I was that way with the Mescalero down in Ruidosa, because I went to school with the kids, you know, played basketball with them, mm-hmm. and got to go to some of the ceremonies. And it's a whole different story than what the Eurocentric people think it is.
Yeah. Well, what is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well.
And after that first book, then what?
Oh, after that one came Mystery of Chaco Canyon, which features the Jicarilla again, but we think of this one as the Da Vinci Code meets the Wild West.
Great idea.
A fabulous treasure hidden in the desert.
That's good.
To find it, they'll have to solve all the archaeological mysteries of the Southwest.
We were talking with Gail in the first half hour, and one of her hobbies is geocaching. And so it sounds like this is an Old West geocache.
Yeah,
kind of. Yeah, sort of. It's bigger than that.
Yeah, for sure.
You're familiar with the Los Lunas Decalogue Stone?
Well, I'm familiar with Los Lunas. That's where my folks lived, went up until they passed away. But I didn't know any of the stones were lost.
Well, out by Hidden Mountain,
okay.
There's a stone with the Ten Commandments carved on it in an ancient Hebrew dialect.
Wow, that is...
The dialect was unknown at the time the stone was found. It has since turned out to be about right for 600 B.C.
No kidding, wow.
That is cool. That is, yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, that sounds like another book, though.
Yeah, duh.
You know, that's all in Mystery of Chaco Canyon.
Oh, I'm going to have to read it because, you know, one of the things that kind of intrigued me about the book when reading about it is it mentioned that it was a love story, and people don't realize it, but that was one of the things that made Zane Grey such a great writer was that they were ranch romances for the ladies,
mm-hmm.
and generally his strongest characters were the ladies.
Well, you know, Louis L'Amour, all of his stories were love stories.
Yeah.
Same plot every time. Strong, lonely guy, beautiful, inaccessible maiden, and a lot of bad guys.
Well, you know, I hate to tell you this, Doug, but I don't know about your personal life, but they're still inaccessible to my life. They're Lucy creatures. Oh, that's cool.
That's funny.
Well, you know, tell us about Devil on the Loose.
About which?
Devil on the Loose.
Oh, Devil on the Loose is set down here in southern Arizona, back when it was only Tucson, Dubuque, and Sonoyta Creek, before the Civil War. If you know the area
mm-hmm.
and you know the history of the people here, you'll recognize many of them in books.
Hmm. Well, you know, I like this concept of this former dragoon being bothered by fairies. Now, are these prairie fairies, or are they? I don't want to get into the politically incorrect area, but that's an intriguing concept to me. You know, because if you deal with the Native American, they have these little spirit creatures that affect people's lives.
Well, he's a Cornishman by birth.
Oh, he brought him with him then, probably.
Yeah, right.
And he finds himself at times disky-led.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Which means being let off by the fairy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I built a lot of the Cornish slang into the book so that at moments he's almost unintelligible. But that goes back to my grandparents came from Cornwall.
That's good.
And I spent the first 5 years of my life with my grandmother and didn't know I learned all the Cornish slang.
Yeah, that is so neat.
And as an adult, I get told this stuff's unintelligible. I say, what do you mean? It makes perfect sense to me.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, of course. If Grandma said it, it had to be
there
right.
There you go, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to take a break here. This will be our last break. And we're talking with Doug Hocking. He's an author.
One of our faves.
One of our faves as well. He'll be at the Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House on Saturday, November the 4th. We're going to be right back, so stick around.
You're part of the West, part of the song, part of the glory, part of the plot, part of the story, and you're living it today. Part of the West, part of the work and part of the sweat, and you ain't through with it yet, you're part of the West.
Wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship and probate. There's only one attorney you need to help you with these important issues, Ron Zach. Every client is treated with respect, consideration, and compassion. You deserve legal help that is understandable and affordable. Ron Zach listens and explains the issues to you. Call Ron today, 331-3232. All calls are returned within 24 hours. Or visit TucsonEstatePlanning.com. That's TucsonEstatePlanning.com.
Imus Wilkinson Investments, 777-1911, is a unique investment management firm. They pay little attention to where the market indicators are because smart investment management goes way beyond checking stock exchanges. They are very good at managing all types of investment based on client expectations. They build relationships, and they want clients, not customers. My family is proudly included among them, and they'll help you, as they did us, design a portfolio that achieves what you want when you need it. Imus Wilkinson Investments, they're really good at what they do.
777-1911. Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Oh, give me a horse, a great big horse, and give me a buckaroo, and let me wahoo,
wahoo, wahoo.
Oh, give me a ranch, a big pair of pants, and give me a Stetson too, and let me
wahoo,
wahoo,
wahoo. Give me the wide open spaces.
I'm just like a prairie flower, growing wilder every hour. Give me a moon, a prairie moon, give me a gal that's true, and let me
wahoo,
And let us wahoo. Writers in the Sky. Love those guys. Yeah. We're back on Abel Franzi's Voices of the West. Our guest this half hour, Doug Hocking. He's an author. He'll be at the Empire Ranch open house and roundup coming up. Roundup and open house, pardon me. That's November the 4th.
It's at the author's round table.
At the author's round table there. Well, kind of a rectangular table.
Scattered tables.
Yeah, but anyway. Welcome back, Doug.
Well, thank you. And I am looking forward to fall roundup.
That's
one of the best shows in Arizona.
Yep, so are
we. Thank you. How many years have you done that now, Doug?
Oh, I think this will be my fifth or sixth year.
Yeah. See, that shows you, folks, when we hook them, they stay hooked.
That's right.
Well, hey, tell us about Keelboat Carnage. That sounds like a rip snorter and kind of up Harry's alley there. River Pirates.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Tell us about Keelboat Carnage. That's up Harry's alley, you know, carnage and piratery.
Carnage.
And
plunder.
Misbehaving.
Are you with us?
Well,
there you are.
I'm here. I've just got an echo on the line.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, sorry about that. How's that work? Is that better?
That's better.
Okay, good.
Well, tell us about Keelboat Carnage.
Well, I'm sure not getting that.
What? One more time, Bunker.
Okay, maybe I'm jabbering too fast. Tell us about Keelboat Carnage, your river story.
Keelboat Carnage, the river story.
Keelboat Carnage. I don't think that. Well, I wrote a riverboat story, The Power of Fox and Snake. It's a short story about a Jicarilla Apache, kind of a Renaissance man who passes himself off as a Spanish don and becomes a riverboat gambler.
Well,
that sounds
like Apache. Gambling is almost a religious experience. It's how they test how they stand with power.
Yeah.
But for the riverboat gamblers, they're all cheats. So you've got an immediate clash of cultures.
You know, this plays into a while back we did a show on cards.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff that I brought to the show was about the fact that the Apache really took to the playing cards that they were introduced by the Spaniards, and they had their own playing cards that they would make out of deer hide and everything. But
sure did.
Yeah,
and they had lots of games of their own. The moccasin game was one where they have something buried under the floor of the teepee in a moccasin. And they would, oh, I have the power of mole so I can see what's in the moccasin.
Funny.
How do you get this power of the mole? I'd like to have that.
No, it's your guardian spirit, your guiding spirit.
There you go. Yep. Everybody needs
the
one.
The powers of nature.
So your guiding spirit, if it was a mole, you'd have an advantage over the others.
That's right.
Yeah, not a particularly good guiding spirit.
No, only for finding lost moccasins.
And Fox isn't a particularly good spirit either. Fox is tricky.
Yep.
The Apache preferred bold and brave. Let's have bobcat or mountain lion.
Mm-hmm.
Bear. Owl was kind of popular among the Cherokee, I think, because...
Wise,
yes. Yeah. And they could turn their head around.
You
see behind.
Yeah.
What are you working on now, Doug? Anything new in the pipe?
I've got a book needs to be submitted in December on the start of the Cherokee War.
Oh.
I'm working mostly on the Bascom Affair.
Hmm.
And I have pulled up all the primary sources, that is, the people that were really there, and what they had to say about it, which is remarkably consistent. And you begin to realize that Bascom didn't do anything wrong.
No, he didn't. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
As the Three Stooges would say, I'm just a victim of circumstances.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he had good reason for thinking that Cochise had the boy.
Yep.
And when Cochise said, give me 10 days, I'll go and get him, Bascom apparently agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Said, okay, go. And then all of a sudden, Cochise pulls his knife and cuts his way out of the tent.
Well, and the army had something to do with that as well. If you believe, I saw an episode of Zane Grey Theater or Death Valley Days, can't remember which one.
Death Valley Theater.
But the army was they had their sights on Cochise, and they didn't want to believe what Bascom was trying to tell them.
You think there was a trust issue there?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, more likely problem was the translator.
Yeah,
that could be too. Yeah.
Well, the boy who was taken was Felix Ward.
Mm-hmm.
The translator was his stepfather, Johnny Ward.
And he didn't necessarily like the boy. Is that correct?
Well, Cochise didn't have the no. He, as far as we can tell, he really did like the boy.
No. The stepfather didn't like the boy.
No, as far as we know, he did.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay. He was a good stepdaddy.
He really wanted him back. But we don't know exactly how he translated things to Cochise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and that has a lot to do with, you know, even communication today.
Sure.
Us talking, speaking the same language, sometimes we have trouble translating what the other person said into own head.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and of course, they were speaking in Spanish.
Oh, so
which
second language for both.
Cochise understood at least fairly well.
Yeah.
And which Johnny spoke, and Bascom didn't.
Well, going back
to Bascom thought he just agreed to let Cochise go.
Uh huh.
And we don't exactly know what Johnny said.
Well, going back,
you may have said you're sticking around.
Yeah, going back to Tom Jeffords, is that how Jeffords communicated with Cochise? Was in Spanish?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, that's
After a while, he began to learn Apache.
Ah, okay.
You know, if you think about it, the Apache probably were better at the Spanish than the Gringos.
Oh yeah.
Because they'd been dealing with the Spanish for
a long time. Yeah, much real long. Yeah.
Exactly, for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Ever since the conquistadors.
Right.
Yep.
And they've been capturing Mexican women and...
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you know, that was one of the great things about the American Indian, is that when they took captives, if they were amenable and fit in, before long, they could become a member of the tribe.
Sure.
And if they were taken young enough, they never knew anything but the tribe.
Yeah.
And so, in their mind, they would always be Apache or Cherokee or Cheyenne, you know, whatever the...
Well, it's like Felix Ward, who was taken and ended up among the Coyotero.
Mm-hmm.
Became a warrior for them, married two different women at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like Apache Kid, too, you know. Yeah.
Well, and then he comes back in the 70s and signs up as an Apache scout under the name Mickey Free.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, that's a great story.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a great story. I hope somebody does a more serious story on him someday.
Yeah, he didn't want to come back home. I guess he'd had to give up one of the wives.
Yeah. And then also, he was kind of framed there at the end when he was arrested.
Right. Yeah, well, and he was a man of some substance among the Apache.
Yeah.
Well, we're about out of time. Anything else you want to throw in there in the just few seconds we've got left, Doug?
Well, that's been great talking to you. And I really am looking forward to... Roundup.
Me too.
Always a great show.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Doug. Thanks.
Thank you much.
Thanks much. Doug Hocking, author. He'll be at the Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House, along with our other author we were speaking to in the first half hour, Gail Corkill, along with a bunch of other authors. And Bunker and I will be there, too.
Yeah, but don't let that stop you.
Right. Come on out anyway and have yourself a rip-roaring time, as we like to say. We'll be back next time on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. We're going to be talking movies. It'll be the end of the month.
And we'll have a new quiz.
And another quiz, yeah. And our topic is going to be the heavies, the Hollywood heavies, and the Hollywood heroes.
Good into bad and bad into good.
Indeed. Think of Jack Elam. Thanks for joining us for today.
Listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.